This year marks the 100th anniversary of the establishment of our national parks system. There's been a lot of different articles this year I've read about that and about going out to celebrate national parks. My wife and I, we love going to national parks. I counted up the other day. We've been to 9 different national parks, everything from Grand Canyon to Glacier National Park to Arches out in Utah. But then when I really thought about it, I was like, you know, really the number is higher than that because I've been to Yellowstone 4 times. And I've been to the Badlands in South Dakota 6 times. So some of them I just like a lot and I just keep going back to. One of the things we love about going to national parks is the opportunity to kind of get away from the crowds. I'm not a big crowd person. So I like to kind of get away from where everybody else is. And we love to go hiking when we're at these parks, taking off on backcountry hikes where we can get away from the parking lots and all the tourists who are just driving through and get out and really see what the parks look like, see some remote vistas and amazing landscapes. And in hiking on a lot of those trails, something we've discovered is that sometimes the shortest distance on a trail is not always a straight line. Sometimes when we'll be hiking on a trail, we want to get over to that place there, but in order to get there, we have to go this way. Right? Because there is a steep, rocky climb. And a long time ago, a trail guide looked at that and said, there's no way some guy from Kansas City who hikes once a year is going to make it up that steep, rocky climb. So the path goes this way, and it kind of goes around the hill, and then goes up this low, sloping place, and around another side, and cuts back, and eventually gets you to where you want to go. But sometimes that's hard to do. You're standing on the trail, and you're like, I just want to be there. But to get up there, I got to go down here. Jesus spent a lot of time talking with his disciples about being a servant. If you look through the scriptures, time and again, Jesus tells them to be a servant. In the 10th chapter of Mark, he talks about the Son of Man, referring to himself. Excuse me. The Son of Man came to serve, not to be served. Taking his role as leader there and saying, I'm not here to be served by you, I'm here to serve. And it changed the dynamic of what a leader looked like. In Luke 22 is where he gives what I talked with the kids this morning about, the first will be last and the last will be first. He takes our social norms and expectations and turns them upside down. You want to be first in line, you should be last. But Lord, what if I don't get a ticket? He says, that's not really the line you're standing in. Then in John 13, where Jesus, near the end, stopped to wash the feet of his disciples, the act of a true servant. Over and over and over, Jesus talks to us about being a servant, about lowering ourselves in the hierarchy of this world that we might raise ourselves in the kingdom of God. Luke 14 this morning is no different. Jesus finds himself at the house of the leader of the Pharisees. You know, one thing, as I was reading through this week, I continually wondered about, how does he keep getting into the houses of the Pharisees? Right? They don't like Jesus. Right? They speak against Jesus every chance they get. They have plots against Jesus. And yet somehow he keeps getting invited to their houses. So he finds himself in the house of a Pharisee, and he decides to do a little people watching. He just kind of scoots back in the corner and just kind of watches what's going on as the guests are arriving. And what he sees is table jockeying. Now, if you've ever been to one of our dinners downstairs in the fellowship hall, or really any large gathering where there's lots of seats, sit back and watch sometime the table jockeying that goes on, right? People walk into the room. And before they move, they kind of look around to see who's sitting where. Nope, don't want to sit next to them. Nope, I owe him money. Wait a minute. I'm going over there. That's where I'm going. Right? That's what Jesus saw. He saw the people walking in. What they were trying to do was get closer to the host. They wanted to sit in the seat of honor at any large meal gathering like this, the seat of honor would be right next to the host. Now, to understand this, you need to understand the context of this a little bit. In the time of Jesus, the leader of the Pharisees would be a fairly wealthy person. He'd have a pretty large house. In this house would be a large dining room for entertaining guests. This dining room The one that I saw from the excavation that I went to in Israel was about 30, 35 feet long and about 25 feet wide. It was a big room. And in the middle of that room is what's called a triclinium table. It simply means a three-sided table. Looks like a big U, right? If we were to take three or four of our long banquet tables downstairs and build a U out of them, that's what it would look like. And when you look at a table like that, we tend to think that the best seat is going to be in the middle, right? In the middle of that bottom part of the U. Because if you think of it like a head table at a wedding, right? That's where the bride and groom sits, in the middle of that long table. But at the triclinium table in Jesus' time, that was not the best seat. Because the host had so many responsibilities, had to keep getting up, checking on the servants, checking on the meal, is this going well, greeting guests. The host would sit all the way over at one end of the U. He'd sit on the very end so he could get up and go away from the table when he had to. So there was only one seat of honor, and that was right next to him on that side. And the further you got away from the host around that table, the less time and opportunity you were going to have to talk with them. Because if you were all the way over on the other side, you think about it, a three-sided table with 35 people sitting at it, you've got to be right next to somebody to hear them. So the seat of honor was to try to get as close to that host as you could. And Jesus is sitting back watching, and the people are kind of jockeying for position, right? Trying to scoot up a little bit further, moving their coat over to this chair, right? Or if it was a meal here, they'd be tipping their chairs forward, right? Like you guys do downstairs. I've seen that. So they're trying to move around and get closer and closer to the host, and Jesus finds that really funny. You know, I mean, maybe the people are just wanting to talk to the host about something. Maybe they want to bend his ear. Maybe it's a prestige thing. They want to make themselves look more important. Or maybe it's about their self-worth. Maybe they feel good about themselves the closer to the host they can make it. Or, you know, maybe it's just a societal expectation. They think they're important, so ergo, they must sit closer to the host. Whatever it is, Jesus notices and decides that it's time to tell them a parable. He says, you know, if you were going to a wedding, and he uses a wedding, that's a large social function, they have lots of people at it. He said, don't sit yourself in a place of honor, because here's what's going to happen probably, right? You think you're important, and so you scoot up closer to the host, and you grab one of those seats, right? You get your purse on it, you get your coat on it, right? And you sit down, you think, all right, I'm only like two seats away from the host, I'm doing great. And the host has somebody come that they want to sit close to them. They look around and your chair is the one they need. They're going to come to you and go, hey, would you mind scooting down? Would you mind scooting down a little bit for me? Jesus says, how embarrassing is that going to be? Right? When you get bumped for somebody else that they want to sit there. Jesus says, no. Here's what you do. When you show up at the wedding, don't even sit at the main table. You want to go into the living room where they got that rickety card table set up. All right? You know the one, doesn't even have four chairs at it. There's a piano bench on one side, right? You sat on the piano bench before. He said, go in there. Go sit on the piano bench and wait. Because here's what's going to happen. The host is going to look around, going to see you sit at that piano bench, at that little rickety card table. He's going to go, oh, no. Oh, goodness. No, that's for the kids. What are you doing? And they're going to come in and go, no, why don't you come in and sit here? They're going to move you up closer, which is a thing of honor. But in order to get there, you got to start at the bottom, because then there's only one way to go. But Jesus isn't done there. He turns to the host, too, and he says, I got something for you, too. He said, quit inviting people that can pay you back. We went out to dinner last night with some friends of ours, had a really good meal, and it was a restaurant I love going to. And when the bill came, our friends jumped up and took care of it. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so nice. You didn't have to do that. I didn't think you were going to do that. You didn't have to do that. But on the way home, my wife and I had to have that conversation about, well, we're going to have to invite them out so that, you know, we can pay for the meal, right? Like somewhere there is this large debt sheet that now I'm in the red on, right? I owe somebody a meal. And if, you know, God forbid I die before I take care of that debt, right? I mean, you kind of feel like that sometimes. But Jesus tells the host, Don't worry about inviting people that can pay you back. Don't worry about inviting people that can do stuff for you. I want you to look beyond that. I want you to look beyond the people that you know and the people that you love and the people who can reciprocate. I want you to look to the person who can't do a thing for you. The person who has nothing. That's the person that you should be inviting into your life. That's the person you should be reaching out to. Not with the expectation that they'll do something for me, but with the expectation that I'm called to do something for them. For Jesus, it's all about the kingdom of God. This world will fade away, but the kingdom of God is forever. We worry and fret about our place in this world, but it's our place in the next that Jesus concerns himself with. We worry about status and honor and privilege and place in a world that the Bible tells us fades away like the grass withers. Jesus worries about where we will find ourselves in eternity. Our place there is impacted by the choices we make here. So Jesus turns the social order upside down. Quit trying to be first, be last. Quit trying to be honored, be humbled. Quit trying to be higher and higher and higher, be lower. My wife and I, after dinner last night with our friends, we went out to Lee's Summit to a place called Trapped KC. It's this thing, you pay for this privilege that they take you and they lock you in a room, and you have like a mystery, a puzzle to figure out to get out of the room, right? Now, don't think for one second I didn't get into that room and think to myself, these are just drywall walls. I'm getting out anytime I want. let's be honest about it. But no, we had the puzzle we had to figure out was it was a bomb and a bank. We were in a bank office, and there was a bomb, and we had to figure out which wire to cut. We had to look for clues, because the person whose office it was, the person that set the bomb, so we had to find the clues. And my struggle with that is I'm fairly impatient. So when I don't find an answer, or at least understand the process for finding an answer, I get pretty fed up pretty quick. But the point of this little game is you have to work together. You have to rely on other people. And sometimes, in order to figure out this puzzle over here, you first have to back up and figure out this little puzzle over here or this little thing over here to figure out that little puzzle over there so you can get this little puzzle. So sometimes in order to move forward, we had to move backwards first, right? We had to figure out the simpler thing that would lead to figuring out this harder thing. Eventually we did. It took us about 25 minutes to break out. And it would have been faster, but I couldn't figure out one of the padlocks. And once again, as I'm, you're doing the padlock and you pull on it, right, to see if it'll release. Every time I pulled, the hinge buckled a little bit. I remember thinking to myself, you know, one good tug on this thing is, again, that is against the rules we discovered. That is not okay. But we did find our way out eventually, just by taking our time, being patient, and by backing up a little bit to see, okay, let's do this in order to figure out this. Hebrews this morning gives us the recipe for this new position that Jesus calls us to. And Jesus calls us to lower ourselves, to humble ourselves, to take a lower place. Hebrews gives us the recipe for what that looks like. Hebrews says, "Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God." Show hospitality to strangers. Put the other first, the outsider, the stranger. Being a good servant is about serving. That's easy to do for our friends, for people we know, for people we want to impress, for people we like. It's harder for those that we don't know, for those that we don't care about, for those that don't impress us. Jesus says, those that are in prison, Think about it like you're in prison. Those that are being tortured, think about it like you are being tortured. He's talking about empathy here. I think this is a skill that we as humanity use less and less. The ability to empathize with one another, to understand another person's journey, to understand another person's struggles, to see the world through their eyes, to walk their journey in their shoes, is something we don't do enough of. Too often, I think, we see a person trapped in their prison by something that is holding them back, holding them down, tortured by their demons, their faults, their mistakes. And rather than trying to imagine ourselves in that predicament, we tisk, tisk, and shake our head and wonder, why can't they just pull themselves up? But Hebrews tells us to see ourselves as that prisoner, to see ourselves as that tortured soul in order to let mutual love continue. Hebrews goes on to say, do not neglect to do good. Share what you have. You have the chance today to do good for someone that really can't do much for you in return. It doesn't have to be something big and grandiose. It's something simple. You know, it's leaving a good tip at lunch. It's sharing a smile with a stranger. It's holding a door for somebody. It's simply using the words, thank you. You have that chance today. And it's probably not going to net you anything in the short term. Not at all. You won't get richer from it. You won't be noticed for it. You won't get a plaque in your honor or a parade. But someone's life could be changed by it. Someone's day could be changed by it. Someone's journey could be changed by it. Someone's heart could be changed by it. And God will notice that. You know, oftentimes on those hikes, my wife and I would begin to get frustrated. We were on one in Glacier National Park a couple years ago and slowly came to discover that I had misread the map. Where we should have turned left, we went straight. Now, it only added like 3 miles to it. But apparently that was a lot. Because I didn't discover the mistake until about a mile and a half into that juncture. At which point, whether we go back or go forward, it's the same now. So we kept going, trudging along, and we came around this corner. We were in some dense timber. We came around this corner, and the timber opened up onto this alpine meadow. We were hiking at about 8,000 feet above sea level. It opened up onto this alpine meadow filled with flowers. Mountains in the background, not another human soul in sight. And we were just stunned by the beauty of that moment. But we got there by not going directly to it. I didn't know that meadow was there. I thought we were going somewhere else and just took the wrong turn. But by going in a direction that we didn't mean to go in, we found something amazing. We all want to be first. We all want to move ahead, move up in this world. It's counterintuitive to us to move down in order to move up. But that's exactly what God demands of us. That we lower ourselves, that we humble ourselves, that we might be glorified. You can do that today by showing mutual love for the stranger, by empathizing with a brother or sister battling through difficulties. By not neglecting to do good every chance you have. Go out today. Love, do good, and know that God will notice.